Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
The election is mostly over, and the Trump administration is preparing for a smooth transition into a second term, or at least Mike Pompeo is. The election didn't go well for Trump, but it also didn't go well for a bunch of other candidates. On this episode, we're going to discuss electoralism and present a framework in which to participate to optimize resources and outcomes. Electoralism is the act of engaging in electoral politics. It's voting, it's running for office, it's campaigning and donating to candidates. Electoralism is a necessary evil that requires participation.
Just like capitalism, you live in a system that has elected leaders. You must participate in electoralism, even if you're cynical and don't believe it'll actually make change. It's the only way for you to actually engage political change. You must do it.
I know hating electoralism is cool online, hair flip, but there's a distinction between hating both Trump and Biden and disengaging at the presidential level because you've assessed there to be diminishing returns of supporting two rapists versus full-out rejecting electoralism. Like, you have to engage in electoralism.
Right, you have to participate. You have to be part of the electoralism because you live with a society system where people are elected to office and they control the resources around you. It's not like it's not that people are just appointed to something. I mean, they kind of are in some cases, but you really have to engage in order to, I guess, affect the outcome. Now, the outcomes are never what you want because there's never anything that you can really gain from electoralism besides the status quo.
It's a harm reduction argument. Good things probably won't come from electoralism, but bad things certainly can.
The other way to do it is to disengage and not give a shit and just be nihilistic. And that's the one way to live. But if you actually do care about the community around you, you do have to engage within this.
So if you're going to play the electoralism game, there are a couple ways to play. And it's really about just making a choice. So if you or someone you know are going to run for office, are you committed to winning or are you interested in attempting to advance some political objective? Both of these outcomes are noble efforts, but you really need to choose one of them. And on this episode, we're going to talk about how these choices were made incorrectly by a vast collection of candidates that ran for office and lost.
Yeah, it's all pretty much game theory. It's trying to assess the world around you and deciding, again, what you're trying to do. Let's start off with Portland. So the candidates ran to the left of the incumbent Democrat, Ted Wheeler. Sarah Ina, I'm not going to win. She was super left. She had a really high favorable rating amongst the leftists there. But he went on and slaughtered her 46-41, even though he had a favorable rating of only 26%, meaning that not even the shit-lib Democrats liked the guy. And yet, when it came to electoralism, she lost the game because she decided to run as some flavor of socialist and went too hard to the left. I mean, she wore a Mao skirt, which is pretty sweet. She wrote in Stalin against the unopposed judge, so she was actually a pretty militant left, except when it came to the fact that she was being a candidate for office to try to unseat a shit lib, which talks then about whether or not you're trying to advance a cause or you're attempting to win. In this case, she was attempting to win. And what happened?
She didn't win.
So what was accomplished?
Nothing.
Exactly. Because her campaign did not choose a single or dual point of interest to champion. She didn't go hard in the court, in the paint. She didn't act insane. She did not raise awareness. She tried to do electoralism as an actual candidate on the left and lost.
So Ted Wheeler is probably one of the worst candidates like in the history of any office ever. Like, nobody in Portland likes him, judging by his favorability rating, but he somehow won. A Portland mayor hasn't been reelected in a long time, so he broke that streak.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, I don't really know what he was running on. I guess more like cop brutality. I honestly have no idea. But he just ran as a status quo candidate in a status quo that was absolutely terrible. And
he made the police. He's responsible for the police in Portland.
Yeah.
Because he hires a city manager. The head city manager has a contract for the police. It's not that hard to figure out. He's the asshole.
He is. I think in Portland, and I'm not super up to date on what the political structure of Portland is, but he's in some capacity like the police chief, whether it's deferred or not, but just structurally, he has oversight over the police directly. And he won because she didn't. And like, there's not much more to say to this other than if your goal is to win and you don't win, what did you fuck up? And so there's a pretty simple case study, and what did you do wrong? I think the main moral of the story here is that if you're going to run as a socialist, you don't necessarily need to yell to the world that you're a socialist. The people in your constituency think the sky is purple. Like, say the sky is purple. Like, who cares? Your goal is to win, not run on some principle and lose and accomplish nothing, which is what the outcome was.
And there is a time to run as a socialist, time to run at any time, really, if that's when you want to advance a cause. You run a hard left campaign. You say, I'm a fucking socialist. And if you pick up 13 or 14% of the vote, guess what? You've got 14% of the people voting on your side, which is a huge, huge number. But if you get close to the shit libs and you get 41%, you didn't win. You didn't advance a cause. You wasted resources. You distracted. And at the end of the day, Ted Wheeler's still in power, and now he's had a second term to cement his future running and do what the fuck he wants continuously. Yeah,
he has a mandate. He has four more years.
Yep. So all the protesting you did, who gives a shit, right? All the fun stuff, all the windows you broke and burned down, all that Maoist skirt you wore, cool. We all love it. Except that your candidacy is failed and you've done nothing but waste people's money on yard signs.
So the moral of the story here is that if your goal is to win, you might have to moderate your position so that you can appeal to these low information centrists that just want law and order. They want to have brunch. They want to have whatever. But it's your job as a candidate to figure out what those positions need to be and tailor your messaging to appeal to those people that you need to win the votes of.
Yep. And again, we're not trying to be shitty about leftist candidates. We love it. Keep going. You know, we have our 100% support. We're just saying that you have to change your strategy if the goal is to win. It's this game theory. If you're going to engage in electoralism to win, you have to win. There's nothing else you can do. Which then takes us to the next case study, Alabama. Right? Doug Jones won against... Was it Doug Jones that won against the fucking pervert?
Yeah.
Is that who it was? Roy Moore?
Roy Moore. Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to look at 16-year-old girls dancing in the mall. Anyways... He's in a red state. It's Alabama. Is he really going to win that state?
No.
Thinking about it out loud. Is Doug Jones really going to win the state? I don't care what the polling says. Are you going to win a state that's going to like 105% to Donald Trump? No. You're not going to win. Because in most states, as a president goes, so goes the Senate. I don't think there was any, was there any races this year that went opposite that you can think of?
Arizona, maybe.
Maybe, okay. There's always one or two Cinderella stories, but most of the time as a state goes for the presidency, it goes for the Senate.
Maine was kind of a half and half thing with Susan Collins, where it looks like one of the congressional districts will go blue and the other one red, but then the statewide total will be blue. Other than Arizona and Maine, no, the Senate went how the state went. And it looks like the Georgia Senate races might go to a runoff. And depending on who wins there, so Georgia's another one that's maybe up in the air.
Yeah, so what should Doug Jones have done?
Well, he should have realized that he wasn't going to win and then plan accordingly.
Yeah, which means you can do a scorched earth campaign and do whatever you want, right? You have 6 months to basically run as far left or as far shitty as you want to and drag everybody down in the mud. He could have went out and campaigned for Biden on the trail, not even for himself. He could have went and tried to get every local candidate that was blue to win just by using his name recognition, getting their name out there, right? Because name recognition at the local level is actually more important than anything else. Just the name. Because nobody knows who the hell you are at the local level. If you just went around to town and just handed out flyers that said vote for me and these six assholes, it would have been a much better outcome for Alabama than what he got, which was stomped. I mean, he got stomped 60-40. I mean, you can't, I mean, an incumbent getting smashed by 20 points is just a ridiculous amount of just ass whipping. To what? I mean, who was the candidate, football coach?
Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah, baby, here we go.
So, yeah, you're not even losing to, like, an entrenched political person. You're losing to some, you know, marginal football coach that happened to coach at Auburn when the team was okay.
And arguably has a better name recognition than Doug Jones.
Oh, definitely. He almost certainly does. He was a football coach in Alabama.
And I'm telling you, names is the most important thing you can have in local and state elections like this, because who the fuck is Doug Jones? I don't know. But you know what? This other dickhead, you know, I liked him. He was a coach. He doesn't stutter too much. I think he's okay. This is Alabama. He should have went scorched earth and just dug everybody down. He should have just flipped over every car and dug every skeleton out of the closet.
I don't think either of us have any grand insight into what actually happened in Alabama, but I'm not aware of Doug Jones having done any of this, but I'm also not aware of him having not done any of this. So this is sort of a conjectural statement of this is what he should have done in the face of losing by 20% and completely losing your platform. You had a platform for 6 months. You want to make sure you use it in this context, and that's kind of the lesson we learned here.
Okay, so we want to do Georgia next then?
Yeah, let's do Georgia.
Because I thought that, you know, we go from losing to winning now, right?
No, we go to losing again.
Oh, he lost?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a fucking perpetual loser.
Correct. He's doing the whole triangulation thing of trying to appeal to, like, focus group. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, all right, so let's go on to Georgia, a state that may go to Biden?
Seems probable at this point, but we don't really know.
We don't know. So you have a candidate who, unheard of, John Ossoff. He's never really won elected office. He's sort of a loser at the federal level. He's going to be a continuous loser the rest of his life now. He was employed by multiple politicians, including John Lewis. So he's been within the political foray. He knows people. He knows insiders. He's basically a moderate candidate insider that people chose to try to pick up a seat in Georgia. They thought that he was some sort of beautiful focus group person. He's a moderate. You know, he does all these things within the politics. People know him. Donors probably know him well. And that's probably one of the reasons why he won, is that he had the ability to actually grab a donor base. But here we go again with trying to win, and you run too moderately, or you run in a way that doesn't separate you from your opponent. And at the end of the day, if you have basically a Republican and a person trying to be Republican, and you're a Republican voter, who are you going to vote for?
You're going to vote for the Republican because you don't have to think.
Yeah, you're not going to go, oh, you know, I'm going to go straight ticket down the line. But, you know, for old Johnny boy or Johnny Ossoff, I'm going to jump over and vote Democrat. That's not how that shit works. It's not how it works.
I know they spent a bunch of money on focus groups. And, you know, I'm the mythical voter that they're targeting. So, you know, I'm going to switch it up for every race but this one and vote for Johnny. Said nobody ever.
Said nobody ever. It's like, hey, nice Crocs. Said nobody ever.
And, I mean, John, at the end of the day, regardless of whether Biden wins or loses, he's going to be within, like, 1% or 0.5%. It's going to be very close. Johnny ran behind Biden, which is either an indictment of Biden as kind of a terrible presidential lead and not pulling people kind of down ballot up, or it's a kind of indictment of nobody really likes Johnny. Because he trailed by about 2% from Biden's performance.
Which is odd to me, because normally as a state goes, you know, they go. So this might be the case where the state doesn't go with the Senate. And this talks again about name recognition, how you're perceived. Are you what people want? And in this case, I mean, it's Georgia. So, I mean, you have Atlanta. I mean, you have a huge area of votes. You could have just went down there and talked about change, and you probably would have picked up those 2 percentage points you needed, but you didn't. You ran a very soft campaign, and there we are again with the loser. Could have went scorched earth either way, but he wanted to win, and you pick a moderate, and you pick somebody who's part of the political campaign and not part of what people want to hear, and it's over with. You wasted a bunch of money.
So for comparison, you had Kelly in Arizona that ran way ahead of Biden. So you have the local candidate that's well known to the population of whatever district you're running in, which in this case was the state. You would expect to do kind of better than the national candidate Biden because you can better understand the issues. You are one with the people, but John didn't have any of this. And we call him John because we're tight, right?
Best friends. Best fucking friends.
And so this is kind of a cautionary tale of he's trying to run this, like, focus group mythical voter. We're going to triangulate into winning by one vote. We don't really want to take any hard stances on anything because that might cost us votes. He didn't support Medicare for All. He didn't support the Green New Deal. He didn't support defunding the police. And it's just like this blasé, disinteresting candidate that doesn't really offer me anything other than, you know, trying to be a Republican but not be a Republican, or trying to be a moderate or a, you know, fiscally conservative, socially liberal candidate that doesn't really mean anything, and then losing. One of the other issues with John is that he's never held office before, so he can't fall back on his tenure as, you know, mayor of some small bougie white suburb and say, I did this nominal thing that would have happened anyway, regardless of whether I existed or not. Like, oh, I increased property values. Property values naturally increase everywhere. Good for you.
Yeah. We had the highest, lowest taxes in the state. We had the highest, lowest unemployment rate in the state. We had the highest, lowest crime rate in the state, whatever. You know, the thing about holding public office is you really don't have to if you have a vision that actually makes sense. But if you've lived in a bubble the whole time and you can't speak to the needs of the people, you actually can't have an honest conversation. So even if he wasn't a politician, but he was, you know, part of a community of organizers that did X, Y, and Z for their city or state, or part of a nonprofit, or even, let's say, a small business owner, which I hate, but, you know, or a fucking football coach like we just saw in Alabama.
He's known in the community, for better or worse. He did something that people can observably view what his accomplishments are.
Even if he was head of the parade committee, right? He didn't fuck up the parade. He could at least point to that, right? But at the end of the day, if you're a nobody, and not to say that nobodies always lose, it's just to say that his messaging campaign should have been, this is what makes me unique. This is what I'm going to do for you. And not just, well, if we play it right, no one's going to find out that I'm a fraud, you know, and not vote me in. And then this moves on to the next idea of basically someone who knew they were going to lose, was chosen to lose, and we're going to call them basically controlled opposition.
We're using the term controlled opposition to define the scenario in which you don't play to win and you also don't attempt to advance a cause. You're effectively ensuring that your opposition wins, and this only happens by design. So in the great state of Kentucky, this happened.
So how do you feign that you really want to do a fight? You pick the most mundane, laziest type of candidate you can to run against one of the hardest fighting political candidates there is in office. And that's Amy McGrath. Controlled opposition. They spent literally $100 million in this campaign. And they spent all this money because they were trying to prevent someone left of her from actually running. And they wanted controlled opposition so that they could, in fact, in this time, have some more moderate win in a state like Kentucky, even though the leftists may have actually been more the candidate that possibly had a chance of winning.
So Amy McGrath ran against Mitch McConnell in the general election, lost by 20%.
A huge percentage.
She barely beat Booker. Booker is currently serving the Kentucky House of Representatives 43rd District in the city of Louisville. He actually has political experience, unlike Amy, who has never held political office. Booker was the lefter candidate supporting Medicare for All and the Green New Deal. He fundraised, you know, a fraction of what she did and barely lost. But Amy won nonetheless, and so she moved on to the onslaught that is Mitch McConnell's pro-corporate, doesn't help the people of Kentucky, but he won their vote 60-40.
Oh my God, Mitch McConnell, for being a piece of shit, has name wreck. He's got a fierce competitor. Like, was he going to lay down and let someone come in and take something he's been doing for, well, I don't know how long, 7 terms now? There's no way. And they brought basically a Becky, or they brought like a Karen to come in and just sort of stand around and lose. That's not how it works. Mitch McConnell is an absolute monster. They brought someone to play nice, and he's not going to play nice.
Amy McGrath did not commit to actually winning, and she did not commit to advancing a cause.
Nope.
And as a voter, you should recognize this as basically controlled opposition, and you shouldn't vote for her. You shouldn't donate. You shouldn't in any way, shape, or form support anything they do. Flag this race as lost and just move on. Stop caring. don't donate, don't engage, don't answer text messages, don't volunteer for the campaign. Just
nothing.
Stop caring because it's over.
Yep. Right away. You know, your money is better spent in your pocket than giving it to those weirdos every day of the week. Because at the end of the day, what's it accomplish? $100 million of out-of-state funding that came in, right? We're going to stop Mitch McConnell. Because at the really, it was a giant fundraise to throw money into Kentucky, a state you're never going to win. Unless you brought in potentially a leftist who could get people who never voted in their life to vote. I mean, that's the only way to do it, is to bring in non-voters to vote. But I doubt that's ever going to happen.
You have to run a very worker-centric campaign if you're gonna play in Kentucky, and the Dems just expressed no interest in that, either in Kentucky or nationally. So it just was never gonna happen. So they did the next best thing and picked some placeholder candidate that would raise $100 million.
If someone came in there and tried to reunionize like the coal mine, almost immediately probably would have gotten the support, right?
Yeah, it just changes the calculus of resource allocation and everything.
Yeah, you're saying we're not only worker friendly, let's shut down the billionaires and give you back all the money you lost in the mines. Guess what? You probably would have had some friends fighting for you. But when you're a pro corporation trying to get money and donations, you end up being another blasé candidate that nobody gives a shit about. And you saw the 40% who just vote Democrat, vote blue, no matter who, because that's just what it is. And that's their support, and that's who you get.
And so the race in Kentucky was probably actually an example where you need to run a campaign that is focused on advancing some objective, and that is your only chance at winning.
Yep, so 100%.
You can't choose between winning and advancing some objective. You have to do both simultaneously, which is part of the reason why this was going to be a tough pickup. You're running against Mitch. It's in a kind of a demographically challenging state historically. So the ideal candidate would have advocated for some worker-based objective, and they would have played to win.
That's right. And they would have played as dirty as Mitch plays.
They would have interrupted his cocaine trafficking, and that would have caused him to turtle up and fold or something.
So the point that we make here and everywhere else is that you need to run, and you need to run and stay local. Because remember, local is how we build our bench. The more you win locally, the more your name is out there in the population and the public, the more you get recognized in the community, and the more or higher chance you have to winning at the state level, the next level. That's number one. Number two, if you're going to run, you have to either decide you're going to win or focus on an objective. Advancing some cause. And if you're going to win, that's great, because that puts you in a position to grow and learn and move within the system. And the other part is, if you're going to focus on just an objective or bringing something, an awareness campaign, you still get your name out there. You can still pick up 15, 20, 30% and still further the objective you want. Either way, it's a win-win. Get out there, run.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.